Welcome to Unexpected Points. I am your host, Kevin Cole. I am joined today by second-time guest on an elite level here. He is Matthew Freeman from the Action Network. Are you still your editor-in-chief over there at the Action Network? Is that correct? I know it's a lofty title.
No, I've actually surrendered my editor-in-chiefing.
Wow.
And very magnanimous. I mean, let's be honest. I really wasn't doing any editing or much chiefing. So it was really best for me just to surrender the title. And now I'm just full-time content, which, let's be honest, I never wanted to edit another piece for the rest of my life. So this is great news for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some slang for what chiefing means that you're going to not... I don't know what it is, yeah. I'm just saying. It just sounds like it could be something.
It's bad, yeah.
Okay, well, of course it's bad, or else it's not fun. So now you're a commoner now, and you just got takes like the rest of us. We all have takes. This is Super Bowl week, so I don't know if it's a Super Bowl of takes for this week, because quite honestly, by the time 2 weeks roll around, we're just done with all the takes. And for me, before we get – okay, well, maybe I'll lay out what we're going to talk about today. So we'll talk about a little bit of what's going on at the Super Bowl generally. Focus on props, though. All the props is going on. The Super Bowl of props is the Super Bowl, of course. And that's a horrible analogy. And then also maybe talk some Matthew Stafford trade and some things there. I got a couple of rants potentially to go on. About that and first round draft picks and value and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, it's the Super Bowl first. It's interesting because this seems like a dream matchup for the NFL, but I don't know if there's any like palpable excitement. Is that just this delayed, long, drawn out Super Bowl week or 2 weeks where nobody's even there in person, so you're not even getting that sort of content that you're seeing what's going on? It seems pretty boring. Like, honestly, if we just fast-forwarded through the last week and a half, I don't think I've learned anything over the last week and a half what I need to know going into this Sunday.
Yeah, it's weird. As you mentioned, it doesn't feel as if there's the same excitement that we have most years, although this is a really good matchup. Maybe part of it is because we have seen these teams play already. They played in week 12, so maybe that's part of it. But yeah, I think a big part of it is that you don't have all of these people there doing their podcast on Radio Row. You don't have sort of like the unveiling of all of the teams showing up and then interviewing with everyone. So it's a little bit different. Yeah, I think the hype isn't quite there, but I still think it's going to be a very good game once the day actually gets here.
Yeah, you don't have the 50 people all crowding around Tom Brady's little podium so they can ask him some question about avocados or something. So we don't have that. We don't have those, yes. those hardball questions this year. What we do have is a little bit of news, though, and this is early. I mean, trades cannot be consummated until the start of the league year. But we have a trade that's been agreed upon for Matthew Stafford. That's the big trade. Matthew Stafford going from the Lions to the Rams for their 2022 and 2023 first-round picks, a third-round pick, and Jared Goff, former number one. So a swap of number one picks and then a bunch of stuff thrown in there. So right off the top of your head, winner, loser, anything, what you got for me?
Well, first, I just want to say I knew you were going to say consummated instead of completed. I know that's where you were going. That's number one. Number two, in terms of winners of thinking about this, like my gut reaction was like, well, this is great for the Lions because they're already in rebuilding mode. Like Dan Campbell just looks like the rebuild type of coach. So good for them.
Oh, yeah. Not a rebuild contract, though. Like, that's what I was surprised by, because I was thinking, okay, this, you know, when the Stafford news came out, I was like, okay, this makes sense. You're bringing in Dan Campbell. You know, he's going to be able to rah-rah through just a really god-awful, like, grinded-out season. But six-year contract, that's not bad.
Okay, yeah, that's true. They have to deal with the contract situation. eventually, they're going to hope to trade him for some pick, just like the Rams did with Goff with that contract. But, I mean, this feels like the type of situation where they get their picks, they get a quarterback, and 2 years from now, the Campbell era is going to be over. Goff is going to be gone, and they're going to have a top three pick with which they draft a future quarterback, something like that. But at least they got some value out of Matt Stafford with the trade. And for the Rams, I mean, okay, I get it. Goff probably wasn't the guy. This feels like compounding mistakes on mistakes. Like the real mistake was giving Goff the, well, I mean, I guess we could say the real mistake was drafting him number one, but you know, it's hard to evaluate quarterbacks. If you have the number one pick, you take your shot at the best quarterback who's there if you need one. So whatever, I don't fault them too much for that. The big thing is they gave him the contract. And then now they're just making another mistake by trading away everything that they can to get a guy who is an upgrade over Goff, but I don't know if he's enough of an upgrade to make that big of a difference. This feels like a very short-sighted, short-term move by two guys who might not even be in the organization in 2 years. So, you know, it's like for them professionally, what do they have to lose? If it works out, great for them. If it doesn't work out, they'll still be able to find jobs because that's just how the league is. But I think it's a bad move long-term for the Rams.
Now, is Les Snead, GM of the Rams, is he just committed to the bit at this point? Like he just said, I'm trading away picks for Goff, and then a first for Brandon Cooks was in there. Was it a first for Marcus Peters? It was like maybe a second for Marcus Peters. I don't remember
two,
what it was.
I think two for – oh, no. I was thinking of Ramsey, but yes. I think it was a second for Peters.
Yeah, so Peters is a second, Jalen Ramsey – I'm trying to think if they have anyone else in there. I think that's about it. But anyway, it's a lot, right? We were talking about 2017 through 2023, well, no first-round picks.
And the picks that they had to trade away, I believe, to get Goff, right? Didn't they have to move up
to get Goff? Yeah, that's included in that because they got him in 2016. So starting in 2017, they haven't had any first-round picks. Now, the take that comes out here, and this is a take that happens – It's been going back as far as time, probably. But definitely the Khalil Mack, I think it was when it brought to the forefront this idea of the picks are not a player, right? So if you have a good player, why wouldn't you take a good, solid player versus the quote-unquote mystery box where you don't know what you're getting? It might be a good player. It might be a poor player. And that's the rationale for a lot of this. And supposedly there were some player personnel people who were saying, this is advanced thinking by Snead, essentially, here. He said, you know, I'm going to take the guaranteed player. I'm not going to take the maybes that are coming through here. And then that's the way that I'm going to build my team. And it's a smart way of doing it in that fashion. What you say, Matthew Freeman?
I don't really buy it. And maybe part of it depends on where you are in the organizational cycle, how close you are to competing. Can you actually sort of identify like the sure thing player, can you evaluate him properly and then know how it is that you are going to use him on your team? So that's one part of it. And then the other part of it is how good are you actually at as sort of like gaming the draft and then evaluating the guys in college and thinking about how they fit into your system. I generally think it's better to go with the unsure thing for most of these teams. Like I think they're further away than they think they are. So they need a little more luck to get there. And I think generally the idea of getting your one player isn't going to do it. Like that one player almost certainly will still not be enough to get you a Super Bowl. So I would rather go with the unknown of what you get in the draft, especially if you're getting multiple shots at players in the draft.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are the big element that people are not paying attention to is the salary cap, what you're paying these guys, the cap hits for these guys. So I don't mind as much when you're trading for guys who are already on their second contract and that's kind of locked in and it won't be immediately renegotiated. So Stafford falls into that bucket. I guess Stephon Diggs kind of falls in that bucket. Let's see if he gets renegotiated this offseason. But the other trade, like the trade for Ramsey, let's say, the Tunsil trade that's happened before this, the soon-to-be Jamal Adams trade, you know, these guys are getting traded for multiple picks. And they're setting the market at their position for whatever contract that they're going to get moving forward because they didn't get the money. They weren't going to get the money they wanted from where they were coming from most of the time. I mean, most of the time, sometimes there can be a real blow up with the team and a guy really wants to leave despite the fact that the team is doing everything in its power to keep that player. But that's, I'd say that's a little bit rare. Normally there is a disconnect on how much you want to be paid. So it's not a free agency move, but it's kind of somewhere between an extension and free agency, right? Where the best of the best players are going to extend with their own team. So you're losing that right also. When you don't draft a player, you're losing this ability to extend him early. You're investing the draft capital. You're your sunk cost is in there. So you're so sunk in on these guys that you have to re-sign them. And often it's at a huge amount and at a premium contract. So all those things come together where you look at the Rams cap. I think it's next season, their top 6 or 7 players are going to account for like $140 million of the $180 million cap. It's insane what's going on there. And I mean, I give Snead some credit for the fact that he's so deep. There really probably isn't a way to dig out without losing his job. So he's just pushing it forward here, right? Because that 2023 pick probably isn't really going to do anything until 2024. So he's buying himself like 4 years in the future of just pushing forward those assets.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the only way is through. But it's a situation where he puts a ton of pressure on everyone else in the organization to find a lot of great players, a lot of values later in the draft or in free agency to be able to find like retread veterans that no other team wants. And then hopefully they actually work in your system. But yeah, it just means you're incredibly top heavy and it's a really fragile way to build your team.
Yeah, I mean, normally, some research that I've done on it and just anecdotally, the mid-range free agents are sometimes where you can find the most value because when you have teams that do this top-heavy stuff, then they have to fill out the roster. Like you could always fill out the roster, but you're just going to fill it out with a bunch of minimum salary type of guys, really low-end type of guys. So there's a lot of demand actually for like poor players that you can get for a minimum salary. So getting the best of those guys is very difficult. And there's a lot of demand for the top guys. And then the middle range can kind of fall through the cracks sometimes. You look at what the Buffalo Bills did, I think, in particular. I mean, they got lucky with a lot of these free agents. But they signed, you know, Cole Beasley and John Brown. And they signed, I think they signed Darrell Williams as a tackle who did really well. They signed some players on defense. I mean, I guess Norman hasn't been so great. But they signed their safety combination. Hyde and Poyer have been really good. Those are all free agents that they signed in that kind of mid-range. And normally you can't build a team that way, but you definitely cannot build a team that way if you're sucking up, you know, 80% of your salary cap on those top players. And the Rams, I mean, they were healthy last year until that playoff game, right? What if one of these years Jalen Ramsey's out for half the season, Aaron Donald's out for half the season, Matthew Stafford's out for half the season? They could be giving away some pretty valuable draft picks as part of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost guaranteed that they are not going to be as healthy this next year as they were in 2020. As you just mentioned, they had very good luck in that regard. So yeah, they are setting themselves up to be giving away a very premium pick.
And okay, so for the Lions side, I think I agree that like one of the things I liked about it, and I wrote about this idea that the risk that they're taking on in this is disproportionate, right? So let's say the assumed cost, and I assume the assumed cost in the Rams' mind is we're giving away the 25th pick, let's say, for the next 2 years. Maybe they think it's even going to be higher, 28th pick or something like that. So they're saying we're giving away that for the next 2 years. We're giving away a quarterback who a lot of people think you have to pay someone to take him, right? So when the Lions are taking all this in, if the worst case scenario happens for them and the Rams win the Super Bowl the next 2 years and Jared Goff is completely worthless and they have to cut him, it's like they're not tied that much to Goff. It stinks, but you have to cut him. You go from 25 to 30, 25 or 27, whatever you're hoping for, to 32. That's negligible, honestly. But if things go the other way, and they get the number 10 pick, that is a massive move in one direction. If Goff ends up being good by some weird scenario, let's say they draft a guy this year, they put Goff in there, and he has like an Alex Smith-ish type of season. Probably unlikely without Tyreek Hill and all that help there. But let's say he has something where they can deal him in a year for a third-round pick or something like that, or even a second-round pick. I mean, who knows? Goff might have gotten like a first-round pick if he had been traded last offseason versus this offseason. There's just a lot of upside there and not that much downside for the Lions.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. There is a situation in which Goff could have a good season and the Rams could totally suck. Like that would just be the best of everything for the Detroit Lions. But I think you're right. There's asymmetric risk and reward in all of this for the Lions.
All first-time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight that put at least $20 into their account while using promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Annual Edge subscription. That's a $40 value for just $20, and you'll get the opportunity to turn that $20 into even more money playing daily fantasy and prop games at one of the fastest-growing fantasy sports sites in the USA in Monkey Knife Fight. Go to Monkey Knife Fight and deposit your $20 with promo code PFF today and receive your free PFF Edge annual subscription. And what one last thing though about Goff that this is going pure tank, right? So this is like I'm putting on my army uniform. I'm getting in the tank here. Pure tankers would say, you know what? You don't even want that potential competent quarterback play, right? If you're really just trying to tank, although maybe this is the season to try to get a quarterback. You got the number 7 pick. You can use a future first, let's say, to move up or something like that. But if it's not and you're and you don't take a quarterback and you're maybe looking to get in position next year, could Goff be not great but mediocre enough to take you out of the running for being able to get the quarterback that you need and thereby destroy the entire thing of being able to move on and get a quarterback and get this franchise back on track?
Yeah, that's possible. And it one thing that they could do, and this is something that I'm kind of having to dig through as I'm doing my my mock draft, my first mock for the 2021 NFL draft. Do they still take
1.0?
At 1.0, do they still
many take people are at like 5.4 or something now? So yeah, you're way behind. So you haven't taken a quarterback.
These people are obscene. So originally, before the trade, I had them taking a quarterback at number 7. Do they still take a quarterback at number 7 and just let him sit, you know, like develop for a year behind Jared Goff? I think that's still an option of something they might do because this is actually a pretty decent quarterback class. So I don't know how the addition of Goff here impacts what they do in the draft. Originally, I thought like, okay, no way do they take a quarterback, but they actually still might.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they have Brad Holmes, who's their new GM, who's from the Rams, that maybe he has a positive opinion. I think he was there when Goff was drafted. So maybe there is something there. And if you look at the trades that they passed up, I don't think they're better for the Lions because for instance, supposedly Carolina had their pick, their first round pick and a later pick. So their first round pick was 8, I want to say.
Yes.
8. So 8 by itself, according to if you look at like trade value charts and stuff, is close to being worth like a couple of future first round picks because of the heavy discounts there. So they weren't necessarily taking the best deal. So did they think that Goff wasn't a negative as part of this trade?
Maybe. I think part of it is also there's the optionality that they get. Like if they get Goff and they get the future first, they have different avenues. One avenue is that like Goff is actually good and they can continue to move forward with him. If he's not good, then fine. They're sort of rebuilding for the future. And then they can do that with the other first round picks that will be coming in at that point. So I think it enables them kind of to have multiple avenues to what their future could be. Whereas if they trade Stafford for the number 8 now, like it's immediately now signaling a rebuild.
Okay. Now this is probably, I probably should have touched on this earlier as part of the trade value discussion, but Matthew Stafford, like how good is Matthew Stafford? Because he was number 1 pick. We know that he threw it like a billion times in a 5 or 6 year stretch earlier in the year. That's why he has these ungodly numbers that everyone points to. And the rare occasion that's every offseason, someone wants to say, hey, Matthew Stafford should go to the Hall of Fame for some reason. They want to throw it out there despite the lack of efficiency. But he has the tools. People love him. Tape watchers love him. He can make all the throws. He's the leader of the, if this was Patrick Mahomes, what would the media be saying about him from from the fandom? He's the number 1 guy there. So did you buy that he's a lot better than who he's been? Because I think some people say, hey, he's had a bad defense. That's why his team hasn't won. But from the analytics people are not pointing at him and saying he's mediocre or he's above average but not great because he doesn't win games. They're saying that because he's not efficient throwing the football, which the defense, I mean, doesn't matter that much how good the defense is. Like, did it hurt Drew Brees when he had a god awful defense? Did it hurt Patrick Mahomes in 2018 when he had a god awful defense? Does it hurt all these guys? Not really. So, like, what's the excuse for a 10-year, 11-year career, half of your career with Calvin Johnson, 40% of your career with Calvin Johnson, another 40% with Golden Tate, you know, Marvin Jones, whatever you want to say about him, he's been in there. He hasn't been totally devoid of talent. The offensive line is actually ranked in the 10 to 15 sort of range. So he hasn't had a bad offensive line either from pass blocking. What are you going with as far as should we be buying him as a guy who has like a top seven type of outcome potential here?
I think it's a real projection to think that he could be top seven. If he gets there, I think a lot of it will have to do with a little bit of luck and then something with the marriage of scheme and arm strength or something like that, where it kind of
fits,
but that's a projection. And I don't feel comfortable making that projection based on what we've seen out of him through his career. And that's not to take anything away from him. I think he's a clear upgrade over Goff, but that doesn't really say much. And as you said, yeah, we have seen Stafford play with some very talented wide receivers. Like, I don't know if you even mentioned Babytron in there, but it's not as if...
Yeah, exactly. Kenny Golladay for the last couple of years.
It's not as if we've seen Stafford playing with a whole bunch of schlubs. Part of the problem has maybe been the scheme and the offensive coordinators that he's had there, but it is kind of hard to disentangle Stafford from the coordinators that he's had. So maybe there's some hope there because, like, I don't think Daryl Bevel is all that great. I don't think Jim Bob Cooter was all that great of an offensive coordinator. Maybe Stafford has had great wide receivers, but he hasn't really had a good supporting infrastructure around him. And maybe with the, you know, like genius of Sean McVay, somehow things work out for him. I think that's the only way it happens. I think it's likelier than not that he's slightly better than what we've seen in Detroit, but not significantly better. And so that would make him, you know, if we're thinking from a fantasy perspective, you know, maybe a low end QB1, but you know, on that QB1, QB2 borderline, but I don't think much better than that.
I think there's some possibility with Stafford that he could be like low key coach killer in a way because of the same reason that everyone thinks he's better than he is. So I agree. He hasn't had necessarily the best offensive coaches, but I mean, what great like coordinators are there who are just like around for a very long time who don't eventually become a head coach or something like that? Finally, the 2021 NFL Draft Guide is out with 150 player profiles, everything you need to be on top of things well before we get to April when your team is on the clock. You can get it with an Edge or Elite subscription. Use promo code SuperBowl25 and get 25% off those subscriptions, and that promo code is active through Monday after the Super Bowl. That's 25% off an annual Edge or Elite subscription, which includes the 2021 NFL Draft Guide with promo code SuperBowl25. I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, you were there when, even what is it Linehan or Linehan? I always say it incorrectly. Is it Linehan?
I think.
Linehan. So Linehan was there. He went to Dallas and he had like moderate success there initially before things kind of fell apart. Jim Bob Cooter, I tell you, there was Cooter love. Okay.
There was.
on these streets. Yes. Because they fixed Stafford by dialing it in and just having him throw a bunch of short passes. That's what Cooter did. That was Cooter time. Was throwing a bunch of short passes all over the place rather than throwing these deep bombs to Calvin Johnson. And then Bevel, people loved Daryl Bevel last year. They were like, this is amazing. Stafford, this is the perfect system for him, this and that. And then he comes back this year and he stinks. And Bevel's probably, you know, we'll see, you know, he's out, right? So he's kind of low-key like up and down, and then every single time he's up, people are like, this coach has finally unlocked this great player, but he might just be like getting lucky. And then every single time he's down, they're like, oh, this coach stinks, we got to fire him.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. It feels a little Romo-esque in terms of the way that he could sort of
don't
vacillate.
Besmirch Romo like that, but yeah.
Yeah, I know it is bad for me to say that, but I was just thinking really of Linehan, but right. Yeah, it's a situation with Stafford where, like, you might be right. He might be a guy who's just very inconsistent. And so when he's great, it makes it seem as if there's something really going on with the coaching staff and how it is that they're using him. And when he's bad, it just makes it seem as if the coaching staff has no idea what it's doing.
Yeah. Can Coach Killer Matt Stafford take down Sean McVay? That will be the question because I mean, look at the last 4 years for the Rams, Super Bowl appearance. What happened after that? Let's go back before that. Wild card. Was that before that? Wild card, Super Bowl, 9-7, would have made the playoffs under the new format. And then divisional round. I mean, You know, are the next 4 years going to look that good? I mean, you'd have to take no, right? If you were just betting blindly on that. So there's some possibility for a little friction in a couple of years if they haven't made a trip, like let's say at least to the divisional round.
Yeah, it's weird that for a guy who has had the success he has had through four seasons, never had a losing campaign, been to the Super Bowl, McVay's job does not seem all that secure, which sounds really weird. But I mean,
Snead will probably go first, I think, if there's something that's going to happen there.
Maybe. I could see them both going at the same time. Like when things fall apart, they can fall apart really quickly. And it might get at the point where it's just like, hey, you guys are both dead.
Wouldn't that be funny if like every person who's ever been briefed on by Sean McVay had a job and Sean McVay himself did not have a coaching job?
Well, hey, it's nice to have friends. He could end up working for one of them.
That's true. But that'd be weird. That would be like the king having to stoop down to that level. But yeah, well, we'll see what going forward. So we just wasted a solid 20-something minutes here on Stafford before getting to the meat of the discussion here. And let's talk props. So it's Super Bowl time. It's prop time. Let's start high level at first. I know we had a props episode before, so you revealed a lot of nuggets on that one. Anyone wants to go back through the archives, they can see Matt giving us all the tips on just kind of a general strategy perspective. But the Super Bowl is different, right? On a normal week, in a normal game, the main headline players, you're going to get some stuff on them, but you're not going to get the third wide receiver. You're not going to get Pringle time on Pringle action, right? I have a feeling. Tell me you have something on Pringle for me.
Not yet. I'm kind of waiting a little bit to see what happens with Sammy Watkins and DeMarcus Robinson. Yeah. But sense. I mean, Pringle's on the radar.
Okay, Pringles. Yeah, so you're gonna have stuff like that. You have these ridiculous ones like the national anthem, coin flip, that sort of stuff. You have less ridiculous ones, but I think they're very interesting. Of you know who scores first in a lot of these different situations. So let's talk like general strategy when you're looking at this Cheesecake Factory menu of props for the Super Bowl. What are you flipping to a particular section first? Are you looking overall? Do you have an idea for something? And then you're going to go, because certain props can all hit the same idea, right? Like if you're saying, I think this is going to happen offensively, there are probably like six different ways you can play that. So, and then looking to see which one is actually EV based upon that idea. What's the ideation process here?
Okay. So big picture process, just big picture ideas first. In general, and we've talked about this, but the under tends to be the sharper side. You know, I think just sort of like psychologically and like physically, like the little dopamine rush that you get when your guy catches a ball, right? You don't get that if you're betting the under and your guy doesn't catch the ball. There's just an absence of anything the whole game. So generally people like to bet overs. That's especially the case for the Super Bowl. So the under tends to be the sharper side. Betting on no, similarly, betting on no, that tends to be the sharper side. Even if you have to lay heavy juice, I think generally that still tends to be the sharper side. So something like betting no, but you have to bet -1,000, you know, like, so is there going to be a safety in this game or something like that? Even if you have to bet heavy juice, there still tends to be value on many of those bets. It's not as early as, you know, like it's not early, like, hey, I'm betting this last week, but it's still relatively early in the process. And so I think generally it's best to bet early because that gives you the opportunity of hitting some lines that are a little bit softer and coming in before a lot of the public comes in and moves lines. And betting early gives you the opportunity to end up hitting some middles later if a line moves enough to where there's, you know, like a 10-yard gap. And obviously bet multiple books if you have that opportunity, because, you know, in a line, like a side, a total, you know, 3, 3.5, like all books are roughly going to be in that range. But for a quarterback prop, like there might be significant difference book to book with, you know, like Mahomes at one book, it might be 320, in another book, it's 330 for his passing yardage. So there is significant diversity between the different books. So you should be sure to check that out. Okay. With the process.
Wait, let me get one question. Yes. So it's about the timing, because I've heard that there can be this kind of wave cycle to it where there might be some softness up front, then it sharpens up. Presumably sharper bettors are the ones who are betting up front. Then it may soften again as the public money comes in. So you're shaking your head. So let's assume that that's the case. Yeah. Now, in my head, when you're saying, like, you know, public money means overs are overpriced. So does that also mean that maybe you would bet more overs early and then more unders later after the public has moved things? Or are those two things not connected necessarily?
They're not as connected. And I should say, even then, I still feel early on that a lot of the lines are too high. And it's just maybe bookmakers just kind of setting it anticipatorily, knowing like, okay, this is a high scoring game to very public teams, people are going to come in and they're just going to hammer the overs. And so they're setting the lines high. For instance, Daryl Williams, and I would sort of love to hear maybe where you have this projected. Daryl Williams, the mentor, exactly. 41.5 was his rushing yardage total when the line opened, which just felt obscenely high for a number of reasons. One, tough matchup going against the Buccaneers. And then two, I mean, that's kind of assuming that he's the lead back and not in a timeshare or the number two back behind Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And so that line, I bet it immediately when I saw it at 41.5, that line has actually moved down to 30.5 at most books and is actually at 28.5 at one book, at points bet. And so, like, I mean, I'm considering like grabbing 28.5 the over and just hoping he hits that middle. Like, that's a massive range. But I think in general, we still see lines that open too high. Sharps do come in and very quickly bet it down. And it's because in their process, they either do a couple of things. One, when it's championship, conference championship weekend, they're just already creating projections for all four possible matchups, or they just create their projections very quickly once they really have a strong sense. But I had my projections ready to go Sunday night, Monday morning at the latest, with kind of ironing things out so that whenever lines opened, I would be able to bet them. So you're right. There is this process of lines open a little bit soft. Bettors come in who have their projections ready to go. They come in and immediately hammer all of the lines that are out of place whenever they can. But the thing is, you still have sort of the basic props that are released very early on. And then it's like every day or every 2 days, books continue to release more props. So it's sort of like this cascading effect where every day or two, there are new props for the sharper bettors to come in and hit. And then eventually more of the public bettors come in and then start to inflate lines once again. So there is sort of like this never ending process of lines being released, lines being bet down, and then lines being bet back up.
Yeah. I mean, for as far as the mentor is concerned, I mean, I think I've seen this with in a few different places. I mean, maybe the simplest way they're doing it up front is just saying, like, what happened last game, right? Or what happened a couple games before? And it's a little bit too much reliance upon that as opposed to the longer season trends, and that's how it'll come together. PFF and Sunday Night Football's Chris Collinsworth is teaming up with one of the best players on and off the field, 49ers All-Pro cornerback Richard Sherman. The Chris Collinsworth podcast featuring Richard Sherman is available now wherever you find your podcasts. They will provide the most interesting football conversation in sports every single week, and sometimes that means the discussion will venture off the field too. Additionally, Chris will be taking a dive into the game of football as he sees it, inviting in the best and brightest to talk about everything that is happening in the great game of football. Mark your calendars. You do not want to miss the best 60 minutes of Inside this season. Now, when you're saying these are released kind of sequentially, is it like the starting players first and then the secondary players and then the tertiary players? Or are we talking about like the player props first and then the who's going to score a touchdown first and then the, and whatever going forward?
It's both. So they'll release the props for the big guys first for the main kind of standard props that you see for every game. And then they start to build it out from there. So then they will release the props for the tertiary guys, the Byron Pringles, and then they will also start to build out from there first to score a touchdown. And then they'll even start to really diversify with, you know, rushing props for the first half or the first quarter or something like that. So there are really a lot of ways in which pretty quickly the market expands.
Okay. Well, let's get into some specifics here, and then I could probably parse out a little bit more of what's going on here. So let's start with your basic yardage stuff for players. Now, this is presumably this would be the least soft. Some hardest does not sound right, but the least soft of the
no hard. Of, it, you say yeah. hard, it's fine.
So the hardest here is that. Do you think that is the case for these, or are there any of the yardage ones on big name players that you like? I mean, the ones that people are talking about. Maybe we should talk about the ones that at least I've heard. I'm only sure. This is like yeah. this may be off, but like a lot of people are intrigued with Travis Kelce because the number is pretty high. I don't know where it is, but I think it's somewhere in the 95 sort of range at a lot of different places, which seems just like monstrous for an individual player. But of course, he has been that guy this year. And he was, I don't think he hit that in their first game. I think he got 8 catches for like 80 something yards though in their first game. So he's not that far off from it, but that's been the MO for them going forward when they're attacking these defenses that are sitting back. And Tampa Bay did sit back somewhat, at least they didn't blitz in that first game. So what about, do you have an opinion on Kelce, or is there another player you think is really in the front of people's minds or is more controversial?
Yeah, you're about to kick me off of the show because I'm a donkey on Travis Kelce right here. I know that a lot of sharp people are taking the unders on Kelce, and I should just say, yeah. like, I get it, but I can't do it. I'm taking the overs, and I just again okay. I feel like
do you have a price naive. Point on that? What's the yeah. what's the tipping point on that for you?
Okay, well, I mean, just I'll say I feel so naive taking yeah. overs on big name guys. I bet the over on Kelce 7.5 receptions. I wouldn't go over 8.5. If it's 8, like that's, you know, that's roughly where it's projected. I think that's about a push. But, you know, just to put this in context, you know, Kelce wasn't getting that much volume early in the year. But since week 8, so we have a 10-game sample here. Since week 8, he's basically been targeted as if he's like Davante Adams, as if he's like the number one receiver in the league. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but literally in all of those games, except for one, he has 10-plus targets. Like that's just like they're treating him as if he is a true number one receiver. And I think you just kind of have to project him as such. Right. Last week he had 15 targets, the week before that 10, the week before that 13, you know, like it's getting to the point where we should just expect Travis Kelce to be in the 90s on a fairly regular basis, because in the past 10 games, he's gone over 107 of them. Right. And his prop yardage over for the season in 17 games is 12-5. So the market has still been pretty slow on adapting to Travis Kelce as a guy who's not a tight end, even though he's a tight end in name, but really a wide receiver by volume and usage. So I'm over Kelce 7.5 receptions and over Kelce 94.5 yards. And I feel like I'm making a massive mistake when I do it, because I know it's fishy. I know it's what everyone else is going, like the newbie bettors, that's what they're going to come in and do. But this is one side where I actually think it makes sense.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, even that the Tampa Bay game that we're talking about, I mean, Tyreek Hill, those long catches, those are also killers for the stats of the other receivers, right? Like if he catches a 60-yard touchdown, or if he catches a slant like he did last week and takes it for 75 yards, that hurts guys like Travis Kelce. But Kelce's still been producing extremely well despite all of that. And it does seem like in the second half of the year, although there have been some closer games, that especially the last few games, the Chiefs have really figured out these defenses when the defenses are trying to play deep against them and not let them score. And Mahomes has really just turned it on to, I'm just going to take what you're giving me. If you looked at his NGS pass chart for last week, it was kind of gross for Patrick Mahomes, but they're all completion, so it's okay. But they were really like in this 5 to 6 yard range over and over and over again. So of course that's Kelce town there. So that sounds good.
Yeah. And one more thing on Kelce, you know, as good as the Buccaneers defense is, I really do think it's probably weakest against tight ends. And so that's just like one more thing for Kelce. Not only does he have great volume coming his way, but I think it's also a pretty decent matchup for him too.
Yeah. And they could be scared out of their minds about what Tyreek did to them last time. Also, yeah. That's a narrative. I'm going down narrative street on that one. I know it's not necessarily good, but okay. So who else are we looking at?
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you my other really donkey bet, and that's Tyreek over 91.5 yards. And a lot of
so
it.
So then,
like,
does this have to go with Patrick Mahomes then? Like, would you rather play both of them individually over than play Patrick Mahomes over?
Well, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, his number right now is anywhere from, I think, 325.5 to 329.5. And like, that is just the highest line that I think I've ever seen for a quarterback. So it's just, it's up there. And I think like, it's roughly correct. So I don't see a lot of value there. I just see a lot of value in terms of like the target concentration being very skewed towards Hill and Kelsey, and then everyone else, I would be fine betting unders on, like Watkins, Pringle, Hardman, Robinson for sure if he plays. I mean, that guy's getting no targets coming his way.
They won't catch him necessarily. So
yeah,
either. So
that's true. So I mean, but so it has more to do with just the sheer target volume I think Hill and Kelsey are going to get. And you know, if we kind of look in a bigger picture sense at what Hill has done in similar spots. In the Super Bowl last year, he had 16 targets and 105 yards. In the two playoff games this year, collectively 21 targets, 282 yards. And of course, I mean, I don't need to say, but against the Bucs in week 12, he just decimated them, 15 targets for a career best, 13 receptions, 269 yards. I mean, this just feels like in terms of the usage that he's going to get, the sheer targets that are coming his way, and then also the matchup, I don't think the Bucs have a cornerback who can stay with him. They have, like, Jamel Dean is athletic, but I still don't think he has the cover skills. Hill lines up all over the formation, so he's going to get his shot against all of these different guys. Sean Murphy Bunting in the slot, I think, is probably the most vulnerable of the three starting cornerbacks, and Hill plays most of his snaps in the slot, so that's a good matchup for him. And then if he gets to match up against Carlton Davis, which I don't think is going to happen that often, I think the Bucs are going to do everything in their power to keep Carlton Davis away from Tyreek Hill. Like, I think Davis is still traumatized from what Hill did to him in just like a quarter of football. But I mean, I just don't think that they have the type of cornerback who can stick with Hill. So that's honestly where this is coming from like a sort of like X's and O's, like I pretend like I know what I'm talking about film perspective, but even just from a volume perspective of the number of targets I think that are coming Hill's way, I like his chances of going over.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was crazy last week. I don't know if I'd ever seen something like this where Hill, especially in the second half of the game, if my memory is correct, or the mid part of the game, where he was, a lot of times it was Tre'Davious White was on it, but sometimes it was some others. He was running, let's say, 7 yards downfield, turning around, and Patrick Mahomes would throw him the ball, he would catch it, and there still wouldn't be someone near him because they were so far off of him. I mean, it was like a play where you throw it out to him immediately at the line of scrimmage, except for he was like 6 yards downfield, 7 yards downfield. It was insane. They were so far off of him. And yeah, if something like that happens again, it's just picking up those, you know, it's just picking up those dimes, you know, just pure, it's like an arbitrage fund or something there. You're just picking up these yards over and over and over again. And yeah, I could definitely see the volume there. And then you break one every now and again. So sounds good for Hill. Let's go to your next one here, and then I can kind of question off of that.
Okay. So, Darrell Williams unders, talked about him before. Yeah. I'm a little bit interested in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and their unders here, because the Chiefs, like, I don't think they have, you know, like, quote unquote, good cornerbacks. Like, they don't have elite level cornerbacks, but their scheme is built in such a way to where they limit the big play on the perimeter and down the field. And that, you know, so you saw that in the numbers overall in the regular season. They allowed the fewest receptions to opposing wide receivers and the second fewest receiving yards. You know, they just sort of funnel a lot of aerial production towards running backs and towards tight ends. And so even though Mike Evans had two touchdowns in week 12 against the Bucs, he didn't really have all that great of a game. He had 9 targets for just 50 yards. I'm looking under Mike Evans, 63.5 yards receiving. And I'm also looking under Chris Godwin, 77.5 yards receiving. I just think that with their scheme, they're going to do everything that they can to take away the wide receivers and force Brady to look more towards his running backs and tight ends.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Now, Brady was I mean, I wouldn't say surprisingly aggressive, but he's been pretty aggressive this year generally. And then in that Green Bay game, I mean, you saw that, right? I mean, Evans was open on that first drive where he was hitting him, but still he was willing to go over the top to him. He threw up, not a 50-50 ball, more like a 20-80 ball to Chris Godwin on that one play down the middle of the field that he tipped to himself and he was able to make the catch on. So he has been aggressive going out to those guys. So it'll be interesting to see whether he's willing to let them make a play, even if there is tight coverage, because it's kind of where Evans lives at least.
Yeah, he is. The one thing I would say is like the two touchdowns, like the one to Mike Evans and then the one to Scotty Miller right before halftime, like both of those came against Kevin King, who is just an atrocity in coverage. Like the Chiefs are a little bit different in terms of how they're built. They don't have like Charvarius Ward is not great, but he's not the liability that King is. Like the Chiefs are buttoned up pretty well in their secondary. So I think it will be harder for Brady to get a lot of those like chunk plays through aggression down the field.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked by how well that they seem to cover last week against the Bills, but sometimes you don't really know. Is it great coverage? Or I think what their real specialty is and what Spags' specialty is maybe just confusing the quarterback a little bit. And then if you it takes you an extra, you know, quarter of a second to process what you're going to do, then that's really the difference in a lot of these plays, is whether you can stick on a guy or not at cornerback. So that's definitely interesting. So is this, do you have like a macro view of the Chiefs versus the Bucks then? Now that we've gone everything except for the mentor, you're going over for the Chiefs, and then of course maybe going under on the mentor is probably good for the Chiefs also as far as how well they're going to play. So this sounds like, do you prefer the Chiefs generally in this? Are you concerned about the offensive line? Let's talk about that's going to be the big talking point.
That's a good question.
And you know, it's you know, us numbers guys, it's going to be really tough to figure out. So what's the level of concern there?
Three and a half, something like that. Like I should be concerned about it, but at the same time, you know, part of me is just like, it's Andy Reid and he's got 2 weeks. He'll figure it out. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes, like he's a good quarterback. They'll figure out a way to deal with the pressure. And, you know, I know he has the toe injury, and also that the toe injury, I should mention, I am betting under 19 and a half yards rushing for Mahomes in part because of the toe injury. I don't think he's going to be as desirous to take off out of the pocket, but I do think that he will still be mobile enough within the pocket to where the offensive line injuries aren't a big deal, but it is something to keep in mind. Like it is, if the Bucs win, I do think an avenue there is that their defensive line, which is good, is just able to wreck an offensive line that has very little continuity at this point. So it's something that I'm cognizant of, but hasn't really impacted the way that I've bet it. I'm certainly on the Chiefs at -3, -3.5. I'm kind of in the minority at guys at the Action Network in terms of the way that I'm leaning on this. Like, I think this number should be closer to like 5.5, but that just feels entirely aggressive. But a lot of it is that I just don't think that Tom Brady and the Buccaneers are going to be able to rely on their wide receivers to the extent that they have in previous games. And that is the strength of their offense. So if they end up attacking with their running backs and with their tight ends, I think that's a real tactical win for the Chiefs. And so I do think that the Chiefs are probably the side I like here. And I also think like, it's not a big position, but I'm on the under here. Like it opened at 57.5. I wish I had bet it then. I bet it at 57. It's now at 56.5 at most books. Maybe that will end up being bet back up when public bettors come in closer to the Super Bowl. But I think this should be closer to 55.
And what's the rationale there? That the Chiefs defense is better than people think, or?
I could try to come up with some sort of rationale, but it's just a number. It's just like in terms of like what, like I put numbers into my spreadsheets and that's kind of the number that it gives me. 57.5 where it opened. Like that's the highest over under in Super Bowl history. That's just a really high number. I'm trying to think of the number that we saw. 27-24 was what we saw in week 12. Not that that's like an all telling number or anything like that, but we've already seen these two teams combine to go under 57 pretty easily. 55.5 was just kind of where I had it. So I'm fine with that. But honestly, like I don't feel too comfortable with it. I feel much better about Chiefs minus three than I do about my lean towards the under.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but in that game, I think Brady got intercepted twice on the Chiefs side of the field. I think the Chiefs kicked a field goal on the 1 yard line on the first drive of the game. Just, I mean, I'm telling you, Reed will do something like this, even in the Super Bowl. I know people think that he's aggressive. I don't know about that. And Mahomes got strip sacked on the 8 yard line on first and goal also. So that there could have been some more points.
Yes.
There, I guess I would say which makes sense because there was such a like explosion from Tyreek Hill in that type of game. Yeah, I wasn't that surprised, but I was a little bit surprised by the fact that it was three and a half, because in my mind, I'm always thinking, if we knew these two teams were going to play each other before we saw any games last week, what would it have been? And I figured it would be right around where it is now. And then you had the Chiefs just go out there and completely destroy the Bills, and then you had the Bucks not really play that well and kind of squirm their way through to victory. So maybe that three number is just so, it's like a tractor beam just sucking everything towards it.
Yeah, and so I think part of it is if they had set it any lower, like if they had set it at 2.5, everyone would have just bet the Chiefs. Yeah. So there's no way they do that. Yeah. If they set it at 3.5, you know, they give the public a little bit of room to come in and be like, Tom Brady is an underdog. How can I not bet? So like, there are lots of ways that this could go, and they gave themselves some latitude by putting it at 3.5. But really, like, as you said, the Chiefs looked really good in the conference championship game. I didn't think that the Bucks actually looked all that good with Brady's interceptions. And, you know, you can sort of excuse some of those away, but I don't think that the Bucks looked all that good against the Packers in the conference championship. And then if we look at week 12, I know that this was only a 3-point game based on the final score, but like, this was not a 3-point game. Like the Chiefs dominated the Buccaneers in week 12. In the first quarter, they were ahead 17-0. Even in the fourth quarter, at one point, they were ahead by 17 points. I mean, they significantly outplayed the Buccaneers in week 12. And I think if we played that game out again, and just had, you know, a little more randomness factored into it through like simulations, the Chiefs would end up winning by a touchdown more often than they would win by a field goal. So I'm satisfied with Chiefs -3, -3.5.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. Okay, so what else do we have for maybe we'll skew away from some of the traditional yardage, receptions, touchdowns, that sort of stuff, as far as the over-unders on that.
Yeah.
What do you got for, and do you have like a macro theory on how the game will play out for things like first touchdown or these other ones, which I think there might be more juice on those too. So I don't know if that's also a factor that you look at.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So there is, of course, significant juice on these multiplayer markets, like first touchdown or MVP or something like this. And so for those,
what's the hold on these? Like how much over 100% are we on these?
Like 25 to 30. Like depending on the book, like it's massive. Yeah. So you just have to know, like, one, either I'm doing this for fun or like, screw the hold. I have the right read on this guy and the rest of the market is skewed, but this one guy is undervalued. Right. So, and that's a, you know, pretty arrogant perspective to have, but whatever, maybe you think that you're actually right on this. So
maybe I'll just say really quickly, I mean, people probably know, but just saying, like, if you do the implied probabilities on all the different players, then it adds up to more than 100%. And that's how they're going to make, you know, money, presumably, if everyone was betting proportionally on it, right? Then that's the money that they would win. So they would take in as the book. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the idea. If you add the implied probabilities all together for these guys, for this market, it comes out to like 125% or 130% or something like that. So obviously the market is heavily juiced. That said, you know, all that caveat there. There are some guys who stand out to me. I don't know why Leonard Fournette is just calling to me. I feel so disgusting saying that, but like the Chiefs, they are very vulnerable, not only against the run. And some of that is just the way that they build their scheme. Like, they would rather be weak against the run and against short passes than deep. And both of those things play into Leonard Fournette. And, you know, we know that at this point he is the preferred receiving back in Tampa Bay, as ridiculous as that sounds,
it's like, amazing to me that they do not have someone who can catch passes for Tom freaking Brady.
But I know.
Go ahead.
I know. So anyway, I could see a game, a game state, especially early on, where we see a scenario like this. That defense is good, and it's actually able to put pressure on Mahomes, and it creates something of a low scoring game, or at least lower scoring than we imagine. And in order to slow the game down and to keep the Chiefs offense on the sideline and to attack the Chiefs defense where it's most vulnerable, we actually do see something like a Leonard Fournette game, which again, I know that sounds ridiculous, but if we just look at how they have used him in the playoffs, like we have seen things that are approaching Leonard Fournette games, right? Like we saw 19, 17, 12 carries in the three playoff games, 4, 6, 7 targets in the three playoff games. And if it's a situation where it's a lower scoring game and Leonard Fournette ends up having 20 opportunities against a defense that is very vulnerable to running backs, and it's a low scoring game, Fournette has over 100 scrimmage yards and 2 touchdowns, he has an outside chance of winning MVP. And so there are some books out there at 33-1 where you can bet on Fournette to win MVP, or even 30-1. I don't hate that because I can see like a clear game path to how that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that. I mean, he had some longer runs last week. In these uncertain times, life is full of questions like, when should I start thinking about life insurance? But however difficult these questions may be, Western and Southern can help you answer them. Backed by over 130 years of experience, together we can look ahead to leave the unknown behind. Western and Southern Financial Group, life insurance, retirement, and investments. Compensated endorser, products issued by member companies of Western and Southern Financial Group, Cincinnati, Ohio. What about Ronald Jones? Are we just assuming that it's locked in as far as the roles as they are now? You know, you can't take Fournette out of that receiving back role. Right? He's too valuable.
Yeah, you can't. You'd be making a massive mistake there. So with Jones, so one bet I should say I do have is Jones over 8.5 carries, which, you know, that's a number that he's surpassed, I think, pretty consistently since week 10. Granted, he's missed some games, but I think he will have a role, especially because, as I mentioned, the Chiefs defense is vulnerable to running backs. And so I do think that they will be attacked in that way. But yeah, I think it's pretty locked in stone. Fournette is the receiving back. And because of that, I think he's going to have more snaps. He's just going to be out there more of the game. And I do have him with the edge in carries right now, although it's not a massive edge.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not 100% sure about this, but I remember in that last game with the Bucs and the Packers, it was disgusting how much they were running it on first and second down. And then that's why everyone was commenting on the fact that Tom Brady was converting all of these third downs, because he had to convert these third downs because they were accomplishing nothing on first and second down. And so that disgustingness could play into at least the rushing attempt stuff that you're mentioning for the different backs. And
yeah.
Yeah. Keeping the game close. I mean, Arians is low-key not very sharp when it comes to a lot of this stuff. I mean,
yes.
for God's sake, he had to burn a timeout. Did you go for it on that 4th-and-3 where, like, you have a 4th-and-3 yourself, and the worst-case scenario is the other team has the same opportunity but in 10 yards worse field position, only if you don't get it. Like, it was like a no-brainer type of go for it. But anyway, so Arians could definitely shell, could go into a shell on this and keep it close. Type of attitude.
And so that's really the mentality here. And one thing I should say, we've talked about a little bit kind of like correlated props here, and some books right now do allow people to make correlated, same game parlays with props. And because there are now so many more markets for the Super Bowl, this is the type of game in which that type of feature especially could really pay off. Because if Fournette does win the MVP, that pretty much necessitates that he scores a touchdown. I'd say multiple touchdowns, right? And so just parlaying those two things together could be massive. You add in going over on his rushing total. If he wins MVP, he almost certainly has to go over his rushing total. And there's a decent chance he would also go over on his receiving total. So I think there are some big opportunities here for same game parlays for the books that allow that, especially when you go beyond Mahomes and Brady and start looking at some of these other guys who would maybe win if things just break a certain way in the MVP market.
Yeah, no, that's interesting because, like you mentioned, there are more bets available. Presumably, you can actually find some positive EV on these bets that you wouldn't be able to find somewhere else. And via stuff like parlays, it's kind of like leverage. It's kind of like the books giving you leverage, right? So it's like you know, getting those call options on GameStop. You know, it's like you're playing that one. I'm trying to bring some worlds together here.
Yeah.
So you know, it is leverage basically, though, right? Where, very much. So if you have it, I think parlays get a bad rap, but if it's a positive EV type of bet and you can correlate them and you can get that leverage, it's actually better than
not. You do it only if it's correlated, but I mean, you have to think about the scenarios here. There's no way Leonard Fournette wins the MVP if he doesn't have a big game. So just parlay that with all of the props that have to do with Leonard Fournette having a big game.
Yeah, no, I like that. What else do we have on our list of increasingly obscure props? We don't have to go too obscure yet. If you have anything like ridiculously obscure, we'll save that for the end. But as we're moving down here, what else do you have?
I do think that we could see a lot of sacks in this game. And that's part of the thing that puts me towards the under. Some of it is obviously that offensive line problems with the Chiefs, their lack of continuity, lots of players injured, going against a defensive line that can certainly get pressure. But I also think on the other side of this, that Chiefs defense is probably better at creating pressure than a lot of people think. Four and a half, those are some of the numbers that are floating out there for total sacks in this game. Wherever it is that you find it, I don't mind the over there. I think that's a pretty decent one.
Yeah. I mean, you have the offensive line stuff. I mean, Mahomes and Brady are pretty good about not taking sacks generally.
They are.
But that's a pretty low number, though. That's a low number as far as for a total for a game where you have two defenses that are pretty good going against each other.
Yeah. So that, I mean, honestly, I haven't thought too much about a lot of the more exotic ones. I'm sort of saving that for after the podcast. Sorry, Kevin. But a lot of the analysis has been focused more on players and less on like the game type of props. But there are certainly a lot of them out there. The wildest one, and this is coming from Sean Corner, odds maker at Action Network. But the wildest one, and I love this, is a punter prop. I don't even remember his name, but the punter for the Buccaneers. I think 54.5 yards for longest punt. Sean went back and did some research on this in terms of like what his longest punt has been, what his average length is, what it's been this year and also previous years. And he thinks the under is a pretty strong bet. And based on the word of Sean alone, but then the research that he mentioned in talking about this with me, I think under 54.5 for whatever his name is, the punter for the Buccaneers. I like that bet quite a bit. And that is just sort of like an example of like peak degeneracy of what you can find in the betting market for the Super Bowl. You will never find a prop like that for any other football game, only the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I see Bradley Pinion here. Is he still the guy or did they bring in somebody else?
That's the guy.
So that is interesting. Now, are we doing weather readings on this sort of stuff? I don't know what effects. Is humidity good, bad? Is it all just good temperature? And
I wish I could tell you that I were sophisticated enough to include that stuff in my models, but we both know I would be lying. And the truth is, I don't care. You know, like it's just something that probably is not going to impact all that much.
This is an interesting question. I was just thinking about watching the game, seeing the punt go up, and it's unclear, you can't catch it, so the returner steps back and just the degenerates like hoping that it doesn't bounce forward too much, which way this punt is bouncing and whatnot. Can you keep it straight in your head, all the different stuff that you've bet on, all the different props that you have, Or like every play, can you do a mental accounting and then just not like, or you can even do that? Can you do that during the course of a game?
Sort of, but I generally don't. Like I, because for me, it's something that's totally separate. And it's also like for people who have a ton of fantasy teams, like they're watching different games and they have all of these players. And it's like, you don't really know, like when something happens, what that means overall for your entire portfolio of teams. Right. So in some sense, like,
but you know, if a guy scores a touchdown, you don't have him, right? Like it's a, whereas in fantasy league, you might have him in some leagues and not have him in other leagues. So it could be good and bad, but you're not going to get that sort of scenario.
Yeah. I mean, I keep a sort of running tally, but it's honestly not the kind of thing that I obsess about all that much. Because I don't know, like part of it is maybe temperament. Part of it is having done props for a number of years that at this point, it's just sort of like, it's all the same. Part of it is maybe just kind of sheer volume. But honestly, like I don't sweat it all. The ones I sweat actually are the ones that I talk about on podcasts or on shows to like, even if it's not the biggest position I have, it's just the one that the most people pay attention to. And they're like, you idiot, how could you bet on Travis Kelce? It's like, you know, like that'll be the one when Kelce doesn't hit, that will be the one that stings the most.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that doesn't really apply this year as much, but if you're watching the game, like, do you ever go and watch the game with a bunch of people who are not really caring about any of this stuff? And so you just put that in the back of the mind. If something happens, like, does your wife know what's going on here as far as the amount of money is being put down on these props? Also, I'm not saying that it's that much, but like, is it those sort of things? Like, if you're in good company, are you like, did you stand out essentially?
Okay. So in previous years, when I've watched games with other people, they've been guys who sort of know what I do professionally, and they'll be like, who are you betting on? You know, like they'll ask, you know, and they'll be like, is that good for you? You know, or like, but I generally keep it pretty tightened up. In terms of like, it's best that people in this household don't really have a full sense of how much I'm betting on Super Bowl props or things like that. If I'm just in sort of general company, I'm not like over there, like pulling my hair out or really sweating what's going on with props. Like I'll pay attention to it, but like, it's at the point where it doesn't impact me emotionally one way or another. It's just another form of investing.
Okay. And then, let's, before we go, I appreciate the time going through all of this. Give me all your best ideas here. Now, you mentioned there may be some things that you're going to look at going forward. Is there anything in particular that you haven't looked at that you're thinking about? Maybe we can talk through it a little bit, and then I'll let you go. Where do you think there could be something going forward? Is it would change your mind to look at?
In terms of player props or in terms of like game level props?
Anything that you're looking at now.
Okay. Well, I will definitely be interested in what happens with Sammy Watkins, DeMarcus Robinson, Antonio Brown. Even if Antonio Brown plays, let me rephrase that. Even if he doesn't play, I will probably still bet the under on Scotty Miller. But that's one thing to keep an eye on, Antonio Brown and how that will impact Miller. DeMarcus Robinson, I've already bet the under on him, and now I'm just hoping that he plays, but that's just me, you know, hoping for the COVID thing to work out so that he can play. Sammy Watkins, if he plays, I will likely be betting the under there, because I think there are just multiple avenues through which he could hit the under. You know, whether he's limited, whether he plays, suffers some sort of aggravation, I think it's actually likelier than not, just so that they can keep Carlton Davis away from Tyreek Hill, that they have Davis shadow Sammy Watkins. And I think that's actually a pretty decent matchup for Davis. So I think it's not a great situation, multiple perspectives for Sammy Watkins. So I will be looking at the receiver situations for both of those teams throughout the practice schedule in the week, just to kind of think about where it is that I will end up putting some bets on these guys.
Okay. Well, one last question as a follow-up to that, because that sounds like you're looking for opportunities to go further in on like a thesis that you already have, essentially, in some ways, which is the narrow passing targets for Kansas City, and kind of just an overall lack of production for wide receivers for Tampa Bay. Do you ever flip it? Is there ever like you're making bets early in the week, and then later in the week, as circumstances have changed or as your philosophy has changed, that you might be looking at something that, you know, at least tangentially, when you think about it, is in a reverse correlation to what you've already done?
I mean, yeah, because I make mistakes. And then sometimes, you know, guys that I think are going to be active are inactive or whatever it is. But because we have 2 weeks to build up for this, one, maybe I'm just a little more entrenched in my position. So maybe not a good thing there. But
you're
two,
just searching
I think,
for confirmation bias all week.
Yeah.
All week long.
Yeah, exactly. But then two, I think that just gives us more time to think about what's going to happen in this matchup. And so it's hard to know with the Chiefs in particular, because they do such a good job of moving their wide receivers all around the formation and stuff like that. So you never really know like which cornerback is going to be on which wide receiver. But we have seen these two teams play before. So that does give me a little bit of sense of how things might roll out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate again, spending the time educating me once again on what's
education
going on
is not
here.
The right word. I'm just talking, really. I mean, I have opinions on this stuff. Maybe my opinions are slightly informed and better than opinions the other one, but it's one game and so many different markets. I mean, there were decent odds. I just end up being totally wrong on a lot of what I said.
Well, it would be like theoretically impossible to not be wrong on a lot of what you said. As long as you're right on a little bit more, or you're right on some long shots, which I think Fournette, I'll be looking out for Fournette. And then while I tweet why he doesn't deserve the MVP, if he does for the MVP, I'll be thinking about you, like with Damian Williams last year.
If Damian Williams didn't win last year, Fournette's very unlikely to win this year. But anyway.
Yeah, well, you're not attached to Mahomes, so that helps.
That's
I think
true.
With Brady, in some ways, it's probably better. But anyway, everyone, you know, listen to all the content that Matt produces over the Action Network. Follow him on Twitter at MattFTheOracle. And of course, rate and review the pod here. And we'll be tuning in, starting off the off season. The off season is really like this is when this podcast and my content hopefully comes to shine, because I don't know what's going on during the game other than what my spreadsheets tell me. So the off season, I think I can have a little bit better idea on just poo-pooing everyone's draft and free agency take. So that's what I'll be doing. All right, thanks everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll talk to you next week.